All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, September 19th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. And if you don't want to type all those letters into your browser, DFSR.com/NFL will get you a free now 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Good for NFL. That works for NBA, MLB as well. If for some reason you're still playing that sport in the daily, which, man, MLB late season, it's really something. You got to be a purist if you're still rocking MLB this late in the season. We all cover it under one subscription blanket. So free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. And that $29.95 a month is going to go up at the start of NBA season. So lock in the low price now because that price will not be there for long. We finally succumbing to the pressure of our third partner, Blake, who just has always wanted to raise prices because he's a corporate greedmonger.
Oh, yeah, monocled capitalist. He's like the Monopoly guy, except taller and in way better shape.
And way better at coding than I presume the Monopoly guy.
How the Monopoly guy codes?
Those guys don't know how to code. Look, let's be honest. We've met some coders. That guy does not fit the bill. All right, week two of the NFL is in the books. Here, a lot of stuff to take away. I will say from an entertainment perspective, it completely lapped week one in terms of just games that were watchable. Teams sort of kind of finding their groove a little bit. Still some really bad teams out there, which I think we can maybe talk about as the season goes on. But, I mean, do you think there's some teams? I mean, there's some teams I would classify as, I mean, I don't want to say they're clearly tanking, but man, it's really close. Like, it's not NBA style tanking where they're just like they're starting their practice squad. Like, that's the NBA thing. It's like to be like, oh, we're just gonna play that. We're gonna play our third string quarterback and like, oh, and just bench all these guys. They're not there. They can't really be there for the NFL, I don't think. But this tanking piece, which it does seem like some teams are just so bad. Like, how could they be going any other way? Do you think that means the player pool? Like, do we see, is the player pool for DFS this season just cut down significantly as opposed to years past? Because there's some guys in some teams you just really can't. I mean, I think we're going to go 16 weeks without playing some guys from, like, the Jets. We probably don't see another 49er in there unless maybe there's a Carlos Hyde setting. Like, do you think that's going to be the case? Like, do you think we're actually playing with, 75% of the teams at this point and just kind of lopping off the last 25?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's really any different than it has been in the past. You know, just mostly because of bad quarterback play above everything else. Like if your team just has a bad quarterback, like the Jets or Washington in Houston, or any of these other guys, you just don't. But San Francisco falls in that category. Carolina falls in that category right now.
Indianapolis. I mean, there's the list.
I mean, so it's just like a long list of bad quarterback play. If good quarterbacks appear in those situations, then the fantasy players will follow. Because we've seen this. I mean, we see this with Gurley last year. If you don't have a good quarterback, it's really hard to sustain a good running game. And obviously, it's hard to sustain a good passing game, too. So, yeah, it's mostly just keeping an eye on quarterback play. But I don't think we've ever really had access to the whole league or anything like that. So I don't think it's fundamentally different. Maybe it's, you know, slightly worse than it has been in the past. But, yeah, I think it's pretty similar overall.
Yeah, sometimes I channel my inner Bill Simmons where I just like equate what's happened like 1 week to something that we see every year. That's just clearly not the case. And maybe sometimes you get the most mad at things that you see the fault in for yourself. I get the most mad when he says that things like that. And I just,
bad throwing is what you're saying. And so you're like, when you see bad quarterback play, you're like, you know, kind of hurts you inside a little bit.
No. I just mean that like over hyperbole, like being over hyperbolic about like, about what I've seen for 2 weeks and just transplanting that onto like the all time thing. I'd say that's like a classic Simmons trope. And I always get mad.
Yeah,
I always get mad when I hear that. And then I just,
is this the year of
every year we see this. Okay. Let's get into some of the stuff that we saw from week two. I want to start off with some injuries because there were some pretty significant injuries. And I apologize if I missed some. I made a quick list this morning. I'm sure there's one or two that I've kind of left off here, though I did go through every team last night. I think the biggest injury that comes out of week one is Greg Olsen goes down with a non-contact broken foot injury. He kind of was running a route to the end zone and just kind of came up limping. Never the good sign when those non-contact stuff happen. He's going to be out for quite a while here. That was what, you know, obviously one of Cam's primary targets. Cam has still struggled some with the accuracy. Or how do you see that? Why do you see this kind of floating down to some of the rest of the wide receiver core? We did see Benjamin get some more targets. Funchess got some targets. Do you think we end up ticking those guys up? Maybe some McCaffrey even a little bit too. Do we think we end up ticking those guys back up in the cash game relevance if you're just losing a guy like Olsen, who's just such a huge target guy?
Well, if there's a week to think about it, it would be this week coming up against New Orleans at home. I'm not sure any of these guys are really cash game viable as a result? I mean, yeah, Olsen gets a lot of targets, you know, kind of on the nose, 124, 125 targets per year. Obviously spread out over 16 games, that's a significant portion of the Carolina target share. Benjamin last week was pretty solid against a Buffalo team that was pretty good against the pass last year. But it's just, you got to ask yourself, you waiting for him to call that number? You waiting to see those dreads flop down the sidelines while Cam kind of lobs some ball up in the air, hoping to catch it? I don't know. He is cheap, 6,600 going into this week, but or on FanDuel anyway. But I'm just not sure it's where I'm going to want to land. So it's a close one. Like any other quarterback, I would feel, not any other, many other quarterbacks I would feel better about. For right now, it's going to be kind of a wait and see thing until I see how other things are going to shake out. But yeah, as of now, I'm not sure it moves. It does move the needle. I'm not sure it moves the needle enough for me to want to play any of these
games. Yeah, it's going to be close. I am worried too about the Cam quarterback play. Like, and the accuracy has just not been there. Now we're going two seasons into this where, but again, let's, you know, Carolina's run so hot and like who they played to start the season. My God, they just couldn't have. Sure. They've just been completely gifted a dream schedule to start the year. San Francisco week one, and then the Bills last week, and then now they're going to play. Obviously, like you said, New Orleans, but. New Orleans is so bad too. Like this is the rubber meets the road and just what the matchup is. We'll get more into that over the course of this week. But we have ticked up Benjamin across the board and Funchess as well, because they did see, you know, 8 and 7 targets in a game that where the Carolina did not have to throw a ton. Other injuries here, Corey Coleman, speaking of bad teams, Corey Coleman is going to be out now. He broke his hand, I believe. Rashard Higgins came out of completely nowhere. Rashard Higgins wasn't even available in DFS circles, or at least on FanDuel last week. I don't know if he was available on DraftKings. He might have been, but he wasn't even available last week. Came out of complete nowhere and had 11 targets. Now, this is a wide receiver core that's been pretty bad. Kenny Britt had been like quasi-benched. We might see him return. How much stock do we put into a guy like Higgins? 11 targets is an elite number. I mean, to come off the practice squad and just kind of get fed the ball that many times strikes me as probably worth noting. I just don't know how much. I don't want to go overboard with something like that. He's coming cheap. Where do we see a guy like Higgins with Kaiser kind of feeding him?
Yeah, I was going to say, it just depends on how highly you evaluate a target from DeShone Kizer. Earlier this season, that has not been worth very much. But yeah, Higgins was somewhat promising. I mean, he's 5,100 for a guy who got 11 targets and hauled in 7 of them last week. I mean, he was the most reliable receiver, to say nothing of the fact that he was the most targeted. So yeah, definitely worth consideration. It's a situation I'm going to look more closely at as the week progresses. Yeah, and Corey Coleman was a guy that people expected to get a lot of targets this season, but it's not exactly like he was lighting the world on fire. You know, he'd only had 6 targets in week one, so it's not like you'd lose DeAndre Hopkins or something like that. So, yeah, worth keeping an eye on with Higgins, but I'm not going to necessarily just jam him in all my cash games without seeing the other options.
Couple other injuries that we saw creep up Sunday night game. Jordy Nelson, still questionable to return to that game. I don't know. That's still the active note on him. Still questionable, so we can always hope. Jordy was a... That was a complete disaster because we walked into Sunday night really just needing Nelson for our cash games to just kind of just play a series or two, and the FanDuel cash games got home. And that was actually funny because the projections were so good this week. I usually don't go crazy about like touting projections because I'm a bad sales when it comes to stuff like this, but the projections we had this week were just completely on point. Like, our DraftKings lineups crushed GPPs and didn't take down any GPPs, but cash and everything, really any contest that you were in. FanDuel as well for Thursday and primetime as well was able to weather Jordy Zero storms, which was pretty remarkable. And then just the main slate, he was in our top lineup and really just had to play. And that's where the questionable tag came in, because it was like, now it was clear he wasn't coming back, right? Like two series after the injury, and he's just not out there. I know that Michelle Tafoya doesn't need to get on the sidelines and tell us he's not coming back in, but it is funny that he's still right now questionable to return. He leaves the game. Cobb leaves the game late in the, somewhere in like the fourth quarter, I believe, or maybe late third. Kind of doesn't matter for Aaron Rodgers. Like, where do you know? We can play a guessing game about like what are all the scenarios here. And they could all play. They could both not play. I'm not really sure. Is Aaron Rodgers the opposite of like what we've kind of talked about so far in terms of bad quarterback? Is he so good that as long as like guys like Davante Adams, Geronimo Allison, these guys are just going to be on the whoever's going to be on the field is just worthy of consideration just because Rodgers makes anyone good?
Yeah, I mean, Jordy Nelson used to be a guy that nobody thought was good too, until Rodgers made it not so. So, yeah, I mean, he's still a consideration. I don't know that you're going to play him at 9,300 against Cincinnati going into week three here, but yeah, he's just the same quarterback he's always been, as best I can tell. He can make work of, you know, short down possession receivers or, you know, just fast guys who can run really far. He can really do whatever it is you'd like him to do. I am very interested in Davante Adams, speaking of him, for going into week three. If Nelson and Cobb are out or questionable or banged up, we saw Adams come in as a top 10 overall target getter this week. Went out there and got 10 targets, brought in 80 of them, or 80 of them. He brought in 8 of them for an 80% target to reception ratio, and did have a touchdown as well. So, you know, he has been used in the red zone in the past when other guys have been hurt. I really like Adams going into this week in a, you know, fine matchup with Cincinnati, but it's way more about the fact that he's the only show in town if the rest of the
season. Yeah, and that's a big if, right? Like, we don't really know where their injury status is at this point. Martellus Bennett also saw 11 targets. He had a complete disaster of a game, like got caught on a pick thing that was kind of a close call, and then just dropped a ton of passes. He just had a bad game, yeah. As bad a game as, like, from watching it as you could really have. It's hard to tell.
I would like him going into next week too, though. Like, if it all comes together, we've seen Bennett's a good pass catcher, whatever happened this week, notwithstanding. So I actually would really like him if Nelson and Cobb were still.
A couple other injury notes here that are more question marks than definitive. Like, the Olsen and Coleman things are definitive, right? The Jordy and Cobb ones are question marks. Jordan Howard kind of has a question mark here on him. He did not play near the end of the game, left the game in a sling, arm in a sling. Tarik Cohen did obviously pick up a lot of that usage. Cohen's actually gotten just a ton of targets. He's had like one of the leading target getters like in the NFL through 2 weeks. But you know, Jordan Howard, is this a situation where if Howard were to not sit out, and I don't know, it might be sit out if he just didn't play at the end, and he's had issues with his arms before, would we kind of look toward Tarik Cohen to be a cash game consideration if he was the only show in town?
I think so. I mean, now back-to-back weeks with 8 receptions, 9 targets after the week 1 surprise against Atlanta. So just that alone on DraftKings makes him a great play on the prices he's at right now. If you're going to throw in, like, so he had 7 carries last week against Tampa Bay. If that number goes up to like 14 or 15, he's just an incredible play at 5,600. So definitely a guy to keep an eye on. And any news there about Howard could push him into like being the highest overall player on the slate. I think that's kind of where we're at right now. Very different situation than, say, Arizona, a situation that we didn't really see shake out in any definitive way in week 2, where Kerwin Williams came in, but then there were a lot of, you know, Chris Johnson was coming back off the bench and Andre Ellington and the rest of those guys. But as best I can tell, Cohen is going to be involved in the offense anyway, and everything else is just gravy. So in that way, that's kind of what we're looking for a lot of times in punt plays or really cheap plays, guys who are already sort of involved and kind of interesting, even in sort of their backup roles, but who get, you know, greater stage and are still at the backup prices. So yeah, Cohen's definitely a good
guy. 21 targets already so far through the passing game. It is really nuts, like, for him to be able to sustain this kind of like 9 targets this week. Just kind of to say he came out of nowhere is, it's not a, probably an understatement, but he really kind of has just like the definition of just kind of a surprise guy, and if Howard were to not play, then all of a sudden we're looking probably at some pretty significant value. A couple other just last little pieces which we don't need to get into. Gronk left the game early, though doesn't seem like it's going to be too serious. He was kind of on pace. He was just had a great game no matter what, and it was clear that Brady was fine targeting him, though he did leave. It does seem like he's going to be able to play. And then Javorius Allen completely out-touched Terrence West. West got hurt. It does seem like he's going to be back, and I probably caution people to not go crazy on the Javorius, don't call me Buck Allen play, just because a lot of that came from West just kind of sitting out, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be out for good. All right, let's get into some things that we noticed from week 1. I'll let you start in terms of just like things that kind of stood out to you on from a high level in terms of, like, you know, performances that surprised you, things that we can take away, things that we don't want, maybe we should not overreact to, or maybe people are underreacting to. Where does your kind of head go from things you saw in week 2?
Yeah, I think in week 2, the thing I was looking at most was situations that had changed from week 1 and how they affected things. And also just trying to get better notes on some guys who have changed situation and so on. So I'd love to start with wide receivers here. A couple guys jumped out in this week. So I'd like to first talk about Jarvis Landry. Miami obviously didn't play a week 1 game. He came out there and had 15 targets, 13 receptions. We've seen Landry be a force in the past, and now with Cutler there, I think everyone was kind of trying to figure out who Cutler's guy was going to be, and it seemed like Landry was that guy. 15 targets is obviously tremendous there. Miami's offense overall was very bad, like in terms of just overall yardage, but both with Landry and Ajayi the two bright spots there. It seems like Miami's going to concentrate targets and carries in that direction, and so definitely something to keep an eye on going forward. You know, a lot of those prices still reflect a sort of unknown situation. Landry's just 6,800 going into this week against the Jets. Ajayi more expensive at 8,200. But both of those are definitely guys you can keep an eye on. Beyond that,
well, real quick, pause real quick before you go into the next thing, because I do want to point out with those guys, you know, the Miami team, if week one is any takeaway, and actually when you throw a new quarterback into that mix, you actually can probably have some ideas about maybe what the plan is to going forward. Cutler is, considering Cutler's just completely new to the offense, but Miami strikes me as a lot like the team that they played this week in the Chargers, in that they are just like concentrated on, like, you know, Chargers are kind of like Keenan Allen, Melvin Gordon. Let's just, some other guys are going to take the field, but that's kind of who we're going to look at. When you get a case like that for Landry and Ajayi, like, they have a complete dream matchup here this week against the Jets. The Jets have been completely, completely obliterated on the ground this season. I mean, Right. Something like 500 total yards. I was looking it up last night. I don't have it right in front of me, but they're dead last against the rush by some not even close number. Like, Oakland completely thrashed them this week. Oakland had the old, let's see which guy we can throw into the backfield that can break off a huge run and just be awesome. Like, they had four different running backs that all had kind of like borderline decent games. Going into are we willing to trust that going into a week two with Ajayi, especially? Like, if this is going to be the usage for a guy like Ajayi or even a possession guy like Landry, like, do they make just insane cash game plays just because Miami seems like they've tipped their hand and the Jets are a dream matchup?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's definitely concerning that Miami overall didn't do very much. That's definitely not very reassuring. But given that they're the only two guys, we've seen plenty of fantasy production be produced out of a two-man show before. So, you know, Cutler kind of has that track record in the past. He'll pick a guy and just dump the ball to him, whether it was Marshall, Jeffrey, any guy up and down the list. And so I see Landry as the heir apparent to those guys. And, yeah, it seems like a very good situation.
All right, keep going. What were some of the other stuff you saw?
Cool. Well, the other guy I wanted to ask you about was Alshon Jeffrey. So we liked Jeffrey kind of going into week one. Obviously, our enthusiasm was tempered a little bit by the fact that he was going up against Josh Norman. But he comes out in week two, gets 13 targets, hauls in 7 catches, has a touchdown, 92 yards receiving. Is Jeffrey now just an incredible value going forward, given that this was kind of the guy we were expecting to see going into week one before he was blanked?
Yeah, no. I think this is the plan for him all along. He just drew a really tough week one matchup, like you said, with a top third shutdown corner. These rankings are always a little sure. Weird in terms of like where we rank them. I'm going to say top third because that's where Pro Football Focus ranked him going into the season. But we'll still call him an elite shutdown corner that did follow him for most of the game, not all of it. I think this is kind of what the plan was. I think that they wanted to get him double-digit targets. He's been the kind of guy in the past, though his struggles have always been through the injury. But with a real quarterback here in Wentz, I'm going to call Wentz a real quarterback, and a free agent signing that meant that he was going to be the wide receiver one, I did think that was the plan. I did play him in GBPs because I thought this week he would see some of the bounce back. Now, the problem for him this week is that he's going to get the Giants, and I know Janoris Jenkins sat out last night, but I think that he's supposed to, like, I think they only saw that as, like, he warmed up to play. So I think he was close to playing last night and just couldn't get there. If he drew Jenkins in this matchup, we would probably just be in another situation of wait another week on Jeffrey, I think. I'm encouraged by the targets in maybe a neutral matchup that he had last week, but that would be my concern going into this week. I do love him. I think we project him like close to double-digit targets going forward. I think that's the plan. I just think that he's probably just going to get left on the side this week because the matchup's not great.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. So moving on to some other matchups or situations that were uncertain going into week two, what do you make of the Jacksonville situation? So, you know, Robinson goes down in week one. Nobody really knows what to figure out from them just because they're kind of another team with a fairly bad quarterback and a kind of a spotty track record of production. Then we see Marquise Lee come out of nowhere. He's been a guy people have looked at in the past, but a guy who hasn't put up great numbers in the past. He draws 12 targets, turns 7 of them into catches for 76 yards. So nothing world-beating or anything, but very notable to see a guy like Lee jump up to be one of the top 5 target guys in the league.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wrote Lee and Hearns up for our cash game article last week because I suspected that one of these two would end up into the garbage time zone that Blake Bortles seems to inhabit, and that was exactly what happened with both these guys. I mean, Bortles is completely awful. Like 20 for 34 again. A lot of this production came late in the game when they were just trying to play catch up. He did the old, we scored three points through three quarters, and then we scored 13 of our 16 in the fourth quarter, just as we're trying to catch up to it because we're completely down. Yep. Their problem is the quarterback play, right? Like, I think it's like a running joke, but it's completely true that Bortles is just the ultimate garbage time guy. These guys did not do a thing for the beginning part of the game, and then kind of came out of nowhere. Jacksonville defense is decent, though, so if they get a lead or the game is close, I think that these guys could disappear. I think that they did see kind of outsized target share just because Jacksonville was playing catch-up. Now, if you think that's going to be the thing from week to week, then they probably do fall into the cash game consideration here. I just don't know. I'm just not completely. It's just Bortles sucks so bad. I think that's mostly my problem. It's like, at what point do you think that the volume is going to outweigh how bad their starting quarterback is? Now, it's clear that he's going to feed these guys, but I mean, how many times can I say he's just the worst? He might be the worst quarterback in the league. He's so bad. And so, like, I think that's mostly my problem. It's like, they're going to come cheap, and you're always just going to be sitting on the edge of your seat hoping that Jacksonville gets down and that they just start throwing bombs to these guys, because that's really the only way they're going to hit value.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we kind of get a break from it for this week. Baltimore-Jacksonville is the London game on Sunday. So, hey, welcome back, London games. This should be fun.
Yeah.
But you're not going to – people don't really play that slate too aggressively. So, Lee and Hearns, it's another week of wait and see for me. I will say that if they were on the main slate, I don't think I would run them out there against Baltimore anyway. I've seen this dance before with both Jacksonville and other bad teams, given the fact that Hearns was very touchdown dependent in his production and Lee was kind of unimpressive even in spite of the 12 targets, would make me want to wait and see. Another situation I wanted to get your take on, which was a little weird after week two, was Arizona, right? So they lose David Johnson and John Brown after week one, and everyone was projecting J.J. Nelson for big week in week two. Everyone in the industry that knows anything was on Larry Fitzgerald going into week two as well. Nelson was pretty good. Larry Fitzgerald was a big disappointment, but the weird thing that came out of this was Jerron Brown comes out with 11 targets and, you know, doesn't really do a whole lot with him, but, you know, he's cheap as hell. He's 4,500 going into week three here. Is Jerron Brown the type of guy we want to take a stab on for cash game purposes, knowing that Arizona did have those 11 targets to redistribute?
Now, this is a weird game. I think that we could probably take him up a little bit. Nowhere near this level. I would still kind of continue to ride Fitzgerald going forward. Palmer really struggled at the beginning of this game to really kind of get anything going. Their ground game was a complete mess, as most people would have predicted to be. Like, they started with Kerwin Williams, then they kind of rode on Chris Johnson later in the game. They just looked like a really bad team.
Which should be
expected, right? They lost arguably the best non-quarterback skill player in the game from their team. So losing a guy like David Johnson is just going to throw your entire team into disarray. You're going to be significantly worse. I don't think Jerron Brown is the kind of guy that I would want to rely on this kind of target share going forward. He still was the third wide receiver. They ran a lot of three wide receiver sets, mostly because they just were trying to catch up near the end of the game. Like, they needed to drive in the second half more than they probably thought they were going to have to. But I'm not on the Jerron Brown train here. I'm actually, even with the Larry Fitzgerald sort of disappointing game that he had, I'm still not really willing to move his projection too much. I do think that he's going to be the guy. It's actually encouraging for me from a Fitzgerald standpoint that they have another receiver that teams can kind of maybe focus in on going into the week, because that maybe just draws some of the coverage away from him, if anything else. So
I'm not sure. I think it's close. Like, Fitzgerald only had 6 targets. He was Nelson and Brown both had more targets than he did, and that's kind of Fitzgerald's calling card, right? Like, isn't the whole reason I play Larry Fitzgerald to get the easy highest target share on the team? Now, granted, he did have 13 against Detroit in week one and was considerably better, but Indy not really known for their pass defense. So I think maybe I'm a little bit more spooked than you are. I also think that JJ Nelson, 5,700 remains a good play. I think that people will be a little bit bullish on him just by the fact that he had 120 yards and a touch. 7 targets there again. You know, he wasn't the focal point of the offense by any stretch. So just a weird team. Like, I just don't know that there's any certainty here at all.
Yeah, they're just not very good now. That's the problem. They just lost. Few teams could withstand losing a guy like Johnson and still be like anywhere close to what their preseason projection was. He's just that good. And the drop off from him to the kind of poo-poo platter of running backs that they threw out there, like, washed up Chris Johnson, washed up Andre Ellington, got Kerwin Williams, who's just not very good. It's just a complete downgrade, and it probably just exposed Palmer a little bit more than they wanted to, because he's like didn't look particularly good either, especially through the first three quarters. Anything else you have? I have a couple of notes in my overreaction, or don't overreact notes, and then two quick questions, but I don't know if you have anything else.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to break down the running back situation a little bit. We already talked about Ajayi being a guy who kind of came out and showed that he's still a high-volume guy. But there were two situations this week but had unexpected names climb to the top of the overall carries board, and that was Washington with Samaje Perine and Seattle with Chris Carson. I'm going to start with Washington just because the guy's name is Samaje, which is James backwards, except they had it added an E on the end, so it's like E-James, like the electronic version of James.
Someone doesn't watch college football. I like the Oklahoma guy. I know you don't watch college football. He was a big guy.
I don't care at all. Any sport that doesn't have a DFS component, I just could not care less about. So, nope, college football doesn't even happen in my household as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, Samaje Perine, 21 carries, 67 yards, really bad for the most part. I know that Kelly got injured there, but can we expect Perine to be the guy going forward here, or is Kelly going to come back?
I'm not on Kelly. I think Kelly's going to come back, one, especially if it's just a rib injury, which I think is something you can treat over the course of a week. And,
just a rib injury.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I had a rib injury, I'd be down for a week. I'm couching this by saying, like, if I had a rib injury, I wouldn't even do the podcast. Like, I'd be in too much pain, I'd just be laying in bed. So no, it's not me that has a rib injury, it's a much tougher guy in Rob Kelly. Like, a much tougher guy,
right? So he should be able to
figure it out. A real man has a rib injury, and I'm sure he'll be able to figure it out over the course of the week. Now, I think that he ends up, those are the kind of injuries that don't typically have you like sit out for long periods of time. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think I am. So I think Kelly comes back. I don't really have a lot of interest in the Washington running game, kind of no matter who's there. And I think that's actually the bigger issue, is that it really wouldn't matter. I mean, I guess if he was like so cheap and we thought he was going to get 20 carries going forward, then maybe. But the Washington run game has just been perpetually disappointing. And I think that I think for that reason, more than anything else, I would just say, nah, forget it. I'm not really interested in it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, people are going to ask about it because, you know, everyone's always looking for these cheap, kind of out of the woodwork running backs. And I'm with you. I don't think he's the guy. How about Chris Carson, though, in Seattle? You know, Eddie Lacy scratched. Thomas Rawls goes out there, gets just 5 carries. Chris Carson steps to the plate, 20 carries here, 93 yards, reasonable yards per carry there. Targeted twice in the receiving game, just one reception for 7 yards. But hey, 20 carries on a team that has sustained fantasy running back production in the past. Chris Carson going into this week, 6,000 against Tennessee.
So I'm equal parts really interested and really scared, because I feel like we've been down this road with Seattle before, right? Like, they've had running back issues. They seem to have not been able to figure it out over the course of the last couple years. You know, we saw times like last year where, you know, Rawls is going to get all the carries, and then that wasn't like totally true, right? Because the messages that come out of Seattle are always like not always just accurate and true and honest. But then we've also seen times where, like, when they have leaned heavily on a guy, the guy can be great. Like, we saw huge games even out of, like, CJ Procise last year when Rawls was down. So if Carson is the guy, and man, it really sure looked like he was. And he looked good, too. Like, he looked like, you know, he had burst when he got the ball. It kind of looked like the exact thing they need. I'm tempted to say that they rely heavily on him, and I'm also holding out that this is not a new story with Seattle, and there's just a very good chance to me that, like, we see 10 carries each for him and Rawls this week, and that wouldn't completely surprise me either. So he's not... I don't root for injuries, but I really wish this, like, Rawls was still, like, banged up or hurt, because then it would be a completely crystal clear-cut situation. But the fact that he's there, Pete Carroll just does this, and they do split carries more than a team that I really kind of want to see from a cash game consideration.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Rawls, you know, kind of on and off injury stuff throughout his career, never really sustained the number running back one role for long periods of time without getting hurt. So I guess it wouldn't shock me if he was unseated by Carson. The price is just high enough to where you're taking a little bit of risk there, but let's definitely keep an eye on that as the week goes along. After that, you know, things pretty much played out as you'd expect. I guess I have a note on Le'Veon Bell. Did get all the targets last week, so that felt very good to me. I actually felt awesome that we didn't play him, but all his target share came back and that he had 31 total touches, so we didn't need to bite the bullet of guessing right on the opportunity but not getting the production.
Now, his price dropped to under 9,000 on both sites. He's 8,700 on FanDuel, 8,800 on DraftKings. He gets a matchup against Chicago where they're a favorite coming. I just think that he'll be the highest on running back play, I think, and it's not going to be particularly close going into week 3. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, I like that play too. That's pretty much it. I mean, I think other things generally played out as expected. I'm sure we'll get down my list when we get down to the game-by-game breakdown, other than one other guy, and that's Kareem Hunt. So Kareem Hunt comes out, 2 touchdowns, you know, had a huge week for fantasy purposes once again, but just 13 carries here. And he did have some game in the receiving game as well, but 8,300 going into the Chargers this week. Can we play Kareem Hunt if he's only going to touch the ball 16 times a game?
Where do you stand? Because is he not getting the volume because he's breaking off these huge runs and he just doesn't need to carry the ball more? Like, no, that's a real question. Would those intermediate carries gone to him anyway, right? There's always the question about some of these big runs early in the season. He's had a lot of them, he's had enough of them. You know, when you break off a run for 20 yards, was the team's plan, KC's plan sort of has been this, was he going to get the ball the next three times anyway, and he would have just gotten there no matter what? I think that's my bigger question with Hunt, is where would the plan have been had he not just ripped off 20, 25 yards? And I think that's going to be something that's going to, because he's clearly not going to average this kind of yards per carry from here on out, right? It's completely unsustainable. But if you think the plan is to just continue running him even when he doesn't, then he is. Like, does that make sense?
I think a better way to look at it actually is not just total carries. I mean, it is for some teams simply don't run the ball. Like, we've seen this happen with the Patriots in the past when they go on one of their pass happy kicks. But if you look at Kansas City, we know that they're happy to run the ball with Alex Smith under center. Like, we know that they don't really want to lean on him. This game had very few offensive possessions overall for the Chiefs, and what I like to do is compare Hunt to the next highest carry getter, and that was, first of all, Alex Smith at 4 carries. Not worried about that. And then it was Albert Wilson, who just had one short yardage carry. So the fact that Hunt got 13 carries and Wilson got just the one leads me to believe that we are probably more in line for the week one usage, you know, more in that 17 to 20 carries per game. And listen, Kansas City is just not going to sustain tons and tons of plays per game on the fact that they do like to run the ball, and Alex Smith is a running quarterback, and they don't really challenge Smith to throw downfield. So all those factors together means they're going to have fewer plays run total. But yeah, and by the way, Philadelphia really slowed things down last year too. They were the team that led the NFL in time of possession last season. So yeah, all that taken together, I think that Kareem Hunt's fine going forward, and that it might actually be a value play going forward, given that the sharps are going to look at that and say, hey, the opportunity might not be there. But I think your point is a good one, and that might be more smoke than fire.
Hey, thanks for the comment, buddy. Insane point by me. There are a couple other quick, not overreaction notes. Guys that we saw a significant drop in volume this week, Melvin Gordon barely touched the ball. We had him, he did end up scoring a touchdown, which helped, but he was a pretty chalk play. Didn't get as many carries as I think we thought he was going to. This is not a situation I'm looking to overreact to. Miami probably controlled the ball a little bit more than we thought they were going to. And then DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry ended up kind of splitting snaps and carries this week. So this week, went off the query, but it was something like 34 snaps for Murray, 30 snaps for Henry, and Henry actually out carried him when he was on the field. Do we want to just put Tennessee sort of in a... Now, the game was also kind of a blowout. They were kind of killing Jacksonville near the end of the game, and maybe they just spelled Murray because of that. Do we want to put these two guys firmly in just running back by committee territory here and just not be bothered with it? Because that kind of snap split does have me a little concerned about just the safety on either one of them. Well, really more the safety on Murray, because he was supposed to be the starter. But
100%. Yeah, we don't want to play any of these guys. I mean, Murray also just listed as questionable with his hamstring, considered day-to-day going into week 3. Henry, not really a world beater when he has gotten the extra carry. So yeah, total stay away against Seattle going into week 3. I guess it's a situation worth monitoring if Henry were to emerge, because he did have a promising week 2 on the 14 carries he did get. But yeah, overall, week 3, don't play these men.
In the unedited version of this, it'll be us just continuing to interrupt each other about DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. We'll see if we can end up keeping that in. All right, we're going to...
I wonder if you just spliced the interruptions over each other and just played it three times back-to-back, if people would even be able to tell, because it was so incomprehensible. That's my
opinion. All right, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back again on Thursday talking about some of our cash game plays, and then Friday for our game-by-game breakdown. DFSR.com/NFL gets you that free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, then $29.95 a month after that, and you're all good to go. And remember, that price is going to go up at the top or at the beginning of NBA season. So lock in your $29.95 a month price right now. Buddy, talk to you again on Thursday. Let's go write up some cash game NFL plays.
I can't wait, man. I will.